I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's Valentine's Day, and we could be doing a show about chocolates or online dating, romantic novels, love songs, love-themed movies. Instead, we're doing something much more prosaic, sexting. Texting sexual images and messages, which is becoming much more commonplace, whether between romantic and long-term partners or between people who are just meeting and flirting online. Turns out that Jeff Bezos is not the only adult who is sexting. Images and messages with his girlfriend were published in the National Enquirer in what looked like an attempt at blackmail. Bezos exposed the scheme when he went public with a letter to the owner of the tabloid. We wanted to know more about this behavior, and we asked Michelle Druin to join us. I should add, this is an adult conversation, probably not appropriate for young children. We'll be talking about what sexting says about a relationship, how is sending sexy texts different from sending naked photos? Is this different for men and women, for gay and straight couples? And what's the chance your image will be shared without your consent? Michelle Druin is a psychology professor and researcher at Purdue University, Fort Wayne, and she researches the prevalence and the effects of sexting. And Michelle Druin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can also send us an email you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Michelle, before we talk about what this all means, let's get some facts and figures on the table first. Just how common is sexting?
Well, it depends what group we're talking about. When we're talking about young adults, it's pretty common. When we ask them how often they're sexting words, sexy texts to each other, you get estimates of up to about 80% of people have said that they've sent sexual texts to their partner. And when we ask about pictures, about 50% of them had. But if we look at older couples, so people in longer committed marriages, then the frequency of sexting is far less common. We have about a third who say that they've sent some type of sexy text to their partner, and only about 12% say that they've sent either nude or nearly nude photos to their committed partners.
What's this difference then between sending a sexy text or a naked picture? It seems like there's a different response to that, or a different use rate.
Definitely, and for good reason, because you don't see a lot of headlines where people are shaming someone because of the words they sent to their romantic partner. And the pictures being leaked seems to have a lot more reputational damage potential. So I think that the distinction is for good reason. People are a little bit more hesitant to send those pictures, as they should be.
Well, and some of the research shows that about 25% of sex are shared, I guess, largely without consent.
That's correct. So we have another phenomenon that has grown alongside the sexting phenomenon, which is when you send these pictures or words, people can show them or forward them to others without your knowledge. And the prevalence of that is also quite high.
Why? And is it, are men more likely to share than women, or women more than men?
No, we see about similar frequencies between men and women in their sharing of these photos, or their text messages. And they have similar worries and concerns and regrets related to the pictures and texts that they've sent to partners, especially when they sent those pictures or texts to partners who are not committed partners.
I'm interested that, and it looks like a lot of the research is focused on younger adults. Is there more sexting because they just text more and that's just a part of their sort of daily routine? Or is it that these are people starting out in relationships and it's part of the flirting that goes on?
I think both. When we've theorized about the reasons why we see a higher prevalence rate among young adults, we've postulated that it's probably both of those reasons. You know, you have this perfect storm of budding sexual exploration and a heightened use of cell phones for these kids who've grown up in a digital era, and they're just now, you know, getting access to these phones, able to navigate all of their social relationships over these phones, and at the same time exploring their sexuality. So you have rising rates of phone use at this time. In fact, there seems to be a real high in in phone usage at the stage of young adults, and it does seem to taper off even for people who are in the digital generation. And then you also have a lot of sexual activity that's happening and a lot of new relationships. So what we generally see is that there's a decrease in sexting as people age, but that could also be due to the length of relationships. You know, people who are in long committed partnerships are likely to be texting their partner to pick up milk rather than texting them about their sexual exploration. But, you know, when you have a mature sexual relationship, a lot of those things are negotiated once they get home. And there's really not reason to instigate that foreplay during the day. Whereas for a lot of the new relationships, maybe that's something that's going to prompt them to take that next step in their relationship, or maybe there's a lot of fantasy and flirtation that happens even before they actually have actual sex.
Well, it's interesting you use the word foreplay. Is that how we should think of it largely?
Well, we've asked people, why are you sending these sex? And a large number of people say, well, I'm doing it for foreplay. Other people say fun, flirtation, a way to establish intimacy with a partner. And again, when you think about new relationships, these are ripe for these kinds of interactions. If you want to establish intimacy, what better way to do so than to share your sexual thoughts and feelings towards a partner and know or trust that they are going to keep those thoughts private. Now, obviously, they, as we've seen in recent media headlines, it can't always stay private, which is a big risk of sexting.
Sure.
And that's definitely something that I'd love to talk about at some point.
Well, let's do it now. Let's talk about the risk. No, go ahead.
I mean, I think that it's something that some people are thinking about, but not everyone is. So when you were saying earlier that maybe young adults are doing this because they navigate so much of their social lives through this context,
right.
Well, because of that, they get kind of habituated. You know, I'm sending pictures of my food. I'm documenting every motion that I make. And maybe they're not thinking long enough about the consequences of just taking this quick picture that takes 2 seconds. I can throw a filter on it, send it to my partner. And they're maybe not thinking of the long-term consequences. But there are long-term consequences, and society has not yet, it seems, become immune to the idea of sexting as being just this commonplace thing. We are definitely still viewing it in a kind of negative way. So people have huge risks when they send these photographs, especially that the photographs are going to be shared, leaked, and then cause some type of reputational damage that might affect them, you know, really forever.
Sure. Well, it seems like once you send it, whether to someone you trust or someone who may turn out to be untrustworthy, you do lose control, right?
You absolutely lose control. As soon as you press send, you have no idea where that picture is going to end up. And even if you use Snapchat or one of the other applications where the things are supposed to disappear, That does not mean that someone can't screenshot it and then it forward it on in the Ethernet forever.
You've done some research with others looking at what you call deception in sexts.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious about the word deception because you talk about it as a form of foreplay or maybe even flirting. Because I think of deception as really misleading people about either what you want to do or are willing to do. Help us understand that word deception.
So deception is a broad blanket term, and I'm not sure that it should be construed as deception or more as fantasy. But a lot of times in the conversations that people are having with their partners, their sexting partners, they're saying things that aren't true. They're saying they're wearing things that they're not wearing. They're saying they're doing things that they're not doing. And it may be to keep a fantasy alive with that partner, but it's certainly not being completely honest about what's happening. So that deception could just be this virtual dance of fun and flirtation that we're having over the internet now regarding sexuality. But I thought it was quite interesting that a lot of people are engaging in what I would consider traditional deception. You know, they're not telling the truth. So they might be at home in their flannel pajamas, and they might be saying that they're wearing, you know, some type of sexy lingerie. And people just have to understand that that is actually a reality of sexting, that people might not always be telling the truth.
Is that just a reality of sex, too, which is that people don't always tell the truth about it?
True. Yes, there are a lot of lies that people have in regular sex that they might say, oh, that was fantastic. That was the best ever. Or, that really turned me on. And they don't have to be necessarily telling the truth either. The one thing you have when you have a physical face-to-face sexual experience is you can actually see the partner, right, and you might see some physical evidence of what they are actually wearing. So I think because of this computer-mediated discourse that you have where people are not, you know, geographically co-located, it makes it a lot easier to engage in deception about what's actually happening. But yes, lies about sex have long existed.
Do we know whether sexting leads to either a richer sex life or more intimacy or a better relationship or a more fun relationship? Do we know that yet?
These are great questions. So one of the it's been a kind of negative light surrounding sexting for a while. And researchers have called for more investigation into what could be the benefits of sexting. And there are a couple of studies that showed that sexting is related to positives, especially in terms of a sexual relationship. But in my most recent paper that I did with Adam Galvan and Brandon McDaniel, we looked at couples in the United States and Canada. These were all couples who had been in established relationships of about 7 years, and they talked to us about their sexting practices, and then they also reported on a number of different relationship markers that could be indicative of relationship health. In terms of sexual satisfaction, the people who were what we called hypersexters or frequent sexters, so these are people who are sexting more frequently, mm-hmm. They did have a little bit more sexual satisfaction than people who didn't sext at all, as did the people who are called word-only sexters. So these were the people who did not send pictures at all. They only sent words to partners. They, too, had more sexual satisfaction. But on almost every other factor that we looked at, the people who are frequent and hypersexters fared worse. They were more likely to have relational conflict. They were more likely to have ambivalence about their relationship, which means they were less likely to be sure about whether they wanted to stay in that relationship. And they were in less committed relationships. Their commitment levels were lower. They were more likely to use pornography. They were more likely to report something called technoference in their relationship, or the idea that technology was interfering with the interactions they had with their partner. So, yes, there does seem to be a little bit of a boost in terms of a sexual satisfaction, but in terms of other relationship markers indicative of health, it doesn't seem to be that positive.
Well, Michelle, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Michelle Druin, and she's the first of two guests in this hour of Radio Times. We are talking about sexting on Valentine's Day. We wanted to do something different, and she's a psychology professor, researcher at Purdue University, Fort Wayne, and she does research on the prevalence and the effects of sexting. And you can join us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Michelle Druin about sexting among adults. And in the second half of the show today, we'll be talking about teenagers. Let me read a question from John, who says, why does society still stigmatize sexting when it really can be used as a tool to strengthen consensual relationships? Which picks up, Michelle, on what you were saying beforehand about these more long-term committed relationships, that it had an impact, I guess, both ways. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I definitely agree that there could be a use of sexting in terms of increasing intimacy between partners, reigniting sex life, just continuing to have a positive sexual experience. But I think the reason why sexting has been cast in such a negative light is because we have these big sexting scandals that erupt in the media, and they usually are not surrounding a married couple sexting with each other, or two, you know, consensual adults who are engaged in a committed relationship sexting with each other. So what tends to hit the media media headlines is, you know, teens involved in sexting, people who've had their pictures forwarded by someone else and then they, you know, suffer some negative consequences. You have, you know, kids who are committing suicide because their pictures have been forwarded. So some of the negative press is warranted because of the really negative consequences that you see from sexting. That said, in terms of a sexual relationship and increasing intimacy, there is potential for sexting to have a positive influence on a couple.
I mean, it's a way of saying thinking of you, right?
It is a way of saying thinking of you.
It is Valentine's Day after all, Michelle.
Yeah, I need to be a little more flexible, I guess. It's a way of saying thinking of you, but it's a very dangerous and potentially career-crushing way of saying thinking of you. And not only can your partner forward these images, but what if your phone gets lost, your phone gets hacked, somehow these messages get intercepted, then you might have a potential disaster on your hands. So I think my latest research would really show that words only are probably safest and then also relate to more positive factors in a relationship. So if you're going to send something, the words will probably suffice.
Well, and do fruits work? we know the universal language of sexting, right?
Yeah, I mean, using emojis.
Exactly.
The emojis will still qualify under text, yes, but I think when we're really getting into dangerous waters, right, when people are sending photographs, I think that is the most potentially damaging in terms of, again, career. Also, we have people look back. We've examined this from several different directions, and we have people look back on their sexting, and we say, how comfortable was it when you sent this? How much did you feel pressured to do this? How much regret do you have now? And when people are sending these messages within the context of committed relationships, they see more positive consequences in terms of increasing intimacy or getting closer to their partner or communicating sexual thoughts. But when they're sending them to partners that are more casual partners, so people who they only have a sexual relationship with or friends with benefits relationships, you see a lot more regret, worry. When they're looking back at the event, they say they were less comfortable. So I think all of those things need to be put into consideration. For a long-term partner, maybe the risks are small, but if you're sexting with someone you barely know, you should really think twice.
Well, and one of the things that you told producer John Aronson in preparing for the show is that sexting has been sometimes talked about as the new first base, but it seems like it's more than that.
It has.
If I remember what first base is.
Yeah, I had to actually look that up as I had my students the other day and I were having a debate. The first base has changed a little bit, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit more than that. I think the reason why it's been couched as the new first base is because some of those initial sexual explorations, instead of taking place face-to-face, are now being navigated in an online context. So instead of kissing someone, you might say, I can't wait to kiss you.
Right.
Or instead of, you know, touching someone, you'll use your words to say, I can't wait to touch you, or I can't wait to see what you look like without your clothes on. And those are the first, you know, maybe feelings of sexuality that are being expressed in the relationship, even before some people have even touched each other, even before some people have even laid eyes on each other. Because obviously, you said this show isn't going to be about online dating, but, you know, those people who are navigating the online dating world, they might engage in some of these conversations before they've even physically met a partner.
I want to just ask just quickly about Jeff Bezos, only because, you know, we know now about some of the sex between him and his girlfriend. But interestingly, and should be said, he is the richest man in the world. So one feels that he can, in a sense, do whatever he wants in order to address certainly what happened with the National Enquirer. But he really sort of owned his sexting. And I thought that was interesting.
I think it's interesting, too. And I love it. I mean, just own what you do is probably a good practice. But also, I think it's acknowledging that, you know, these are adults involved in sexual relationships, and this is the way in which people now navigate sexual relationships. So to try to hide all of this as if it weren't happening is really trying to disregard what is a cultural phenomenon that I don't think is going to change. You know, we navigate our lives via our phones, and especially when you're at a distance from a partner, this is a way to do so. So I'm actually, in terms of what the entire situation, you know, I'm not coming out in support of anything, but in terms of the acknowledgement that this is what I did and I'm owning it, I definitely give credit to Jeff Bezos.
I'm interested, Michelle, last question to you. I'm interested in how you got interested in sexting. As a researcher, I should say.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome.
So really, it was very happenstance. I was looking at texting and how it was influencing children's literacy.
So
really a different direction. And as I was thinking about the text messages that people were sending, I started thinking about the other types of messages that they might be sending. And sexuality is obviously, it emerged really early as one of the drivers of the internet. You know, it's still one of the monetary drivers of everything that we do online. So it's a really good natural place for a researcher. And I work a lot with young adults. So this seems to be a really prevalent issue for young adults. They're exploring this. And I always go back to my parents were hippies. So,
is that right?
So my view of sexuality has always been something that's been quite open, and I've been very interested in it. So it's a perfect place for me to land in terms of scientific study.
Well, Michelle, I appreciate you joining us today in Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great Valentine's Day.
You too. And that's Michelle Druin. She's a psychology professor and researcher at Purdue University, Fort Wayne. Coming up, we'll be talking about teens and sexting. But first, here's Trey Songz and LOL Smiley Face.
LOL Smiley Face. Shawty called my phone. I was busy, yeah. Cruising in that Benz round the city. Then I felt my phone buzz. I know that she like thugs. I'm a bad boy like me. Then she sent the text that read, baby, I'm at home. Then she sent another one that said she's all alone. So I text her a smiley face and said, let's do the groom. She said, LOL, boy, you crazy, come on. Then she said, actually, King gotta ask me. Sent that little face with the tongue, cause I'm nasty. I'm on my way, girl, I can't wait. Twitter me a picture, let me see that, okay. Shawty just text me, said she wanna sex me. LOL,
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been talking about the role that sexting plays in adult relationships, and now we want to focus on teenagers. Having grown up with the internet and being so connected to their phones, it should come as no surprise that a lot of adolescents are sending each other sexual images and messages. Should schools be incorporating sexting in their sex education classes? And if they are, how should it be discussed? What are the psychological, even the legal risks, and how can it be part of a healthy adolescent development? We asked Nicole Cushman to join us. She is executive director at ANSWER. That's an organization that promotes sex ed at Rutgers University. And Nicole Cushman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. I said that it's rather common among teenagers, sexting. How common is it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the truth is, we don't really have definitive data on this. It's something that can be really hard to study. There are a lot of challenges to asking young people really explicit questions about their sexual behaviors in a research study. And so we see numbers kind of all over the map, depending on how the sample was selected and how the research was done. But we know anecdotally that it is quite common. But I think the data, you know, mirror in a lot of ways what Michelle was sharing about other, you know, young adults, where it's more common to send sexual text messages in words only than it is to send pictures. But, you know, these are both prevalent behaviors.
And are schools, and I know not all schools and not all states have a mandatory sex education, are schools incorporating sexting into sex education?
You know, more and more, I think that educators are recognizing the importance of addressing this topic simply because it is so hard to ignore. It's such a part of young people's lives and their relationships. However, it's definitely not the norm. Most traditional sex ed curricula don't touch on these kinds of topics. And I think there is a real need for material, for lesson plans and curricula to help educators who want to meet young people where they are and address the kinds of behaviors that they know their students are engaging in, like sexting.
Why do you think schools are not doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple reasons. One is purely a result of some of the outdated curricula that are in use across the country. It can take a really long time to develop a new curriculum, to test it, and to get it implemented in classrooms. And by the time that happens, young people may have sort of moved on behaviorally. And so a lot of the curricula that are in use today were developed in the 90s or in the early 2000s. When some of these technologies either didn't exist or certainly were not as commonplace. But I think an added layer to that is that there is a lot of fear and trepidation on the part of many school administrators to touching some of these really sensitive topics where there may be some legal gray areas regarding minors and sending sexual text messages, and they don't quite know what to say. It can be a hard topic to address.
I mean, it does sound like the way you describe it is that school, especially when it comes to the internet and especially how young people are using digital media, is that we're always playing catch up. They're always ahead of us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why at my organization at Answer, we have really invested in engaging directly with young people as we develop new content and new programs to make sure that we do keep our fingers on the pulse of what young people are doing and saying and thinking. So they really keep us honest and keep us fresh so that we can address the topics that are most relevant to them in a timely manner. And we're able to do that in the digital space where we can adapt more quickly than you can with a classroom curriculum. So we can put up new video content or blog content on our websites relatively quickly compared to the lead time it takes to develop new lesson plans.
And that's Nicole Cushman. We are talking about sexting and sex education, and you can join us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation, and I'm Marty Moscoane. This is Radio Times on WHYY here in Philadelphia. Let me put a comment out from Joan Nicole, who says, can your guest comment on what sexting signifies to teens and the issues of appropriate and inappropriate behavior? And it is, I mean, teens can be really rough with each other. And I'm thinking of sexting and bullying. I'm thinking of all the ways that it can be used in really hurtful and hateful ways.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think the truth is a lot of what Michelle was saying about sexting with adults does apply to young people as well, both the positive and the negative. So when we talk to young people and ask them why they're sending sexual text messages, they express some of the same feelings around wanting to flirt, wanting to establish intimacy, or simply to express desire for a partner in a way that many of them see as quite safe when it comes to physical risks, right? So we've been talking a lot about the reputational risks and a little bit about legal risks that can come with sexting. But young people get so many messages about avoiding physical risks like unintended pregnancy or sexually transmitted infections. And so they may see sexting as a safer behavior that, you know, it's not going to bear any risk for those kinds of outcomes. So those are some of the more positive reasons that they give for engaging in sexting. At the same time, we know that many of them experience pressure to send sexual images and text messages from partners or from peers. And this is often a pretty gendered situation where we hear a lot from girls who experience pressure from boys to send them pictures in particular. And so that's obviously something that we need to address as a much more negative driver of this behavior. But I think when it comes to, you know, thinking about the responsibilities in a relationship and what some of these negative outcomes might be, we need to remember that adolescents' brains are still developing and they don't always have the kind of future mindset that adults do to really think through each step and what the potential repercussions might be. They are very much living in the here and now, and how is sending this message going to allow me to connect with this person in a deeper way?
Because oftentimes, especially with having phones in our pockets, it's such an impulsive thing to do, to just, you know, hit the button or do whatever you want to do without thinking through the consequences.
Exactly. It's super easy, and it's very natural to young people who grow up with their phones as sort of an extension of themselves and the image that they project into the world in the digital space.
It was interesting. Our first guest was talking about some of the research having to do with people that are not in long-term committed relationships but are still meeting each other. And there was a fair amount of regret associated with sexting and feeling uncomfortable or wishing they could take something back. And I'm assuming with teenagers, you know, they may say they're in love, but they're young.
That's absolutely right. You know, young people's relationships can be felt very deeply, so I won't discount their feelings when they say that they are in love. I think that that's really valid. However, we know that those relationships on average are not as long term. And so they do end. There is sort of more frequent transition in adolescent relationships. And each time that happens, they can experience this kind of regret or fear about the risks that an ex might distribute messages that they sent that were really meant for that person's eyes only.
Nicole, we're almost having a break here. Are boys or girls, do they participate in this equally, or is it more boys and girls, or more images for boys, texts for girls? 30 seconds.
Yeah. Again, we don't have really definitive research on this, but I think what we hear from young people is it's more common for boys to ask girls to send these images, and it's more common for girls to comply. However, we know that young people of all genders are exchanging these messages.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, talking with Nicole Cushman from Rutgers University about sexting, sending sexually provocative images and texts, and its impact on teenagers, what teenagers are doing, what do they want to do, what are some of the legal and psychological implications. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get right back to our conversation. Stay with us. Don't go away. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with sex education advocate Nicole Cushman about why she believes sex ed classes could do a much better job when addressing sexting among teenagers. And she is executive director at ANSWER. That's an organization that promotes sex ed, and it's at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Let me read a question from Patricia, who says, what are the legal implications of youths under 18 sending naked pictures to each other? Can minors be charged with pornography? And Nicole, you touched on this earlier, but let's get into it.
Yeah, great question. So the laws really vary state by state, and they're really in flux right now. So there have definitely been some highly publicized instances in which young people have been charged with distributing child pornography for sending photos of people under the age of 18. Whether or not those cases get fully prosecuted is somewhat up to the discretion of local prosecutors. Mm-hmm. And there are states that are really working to write new laws or to revise existing laws, because it's clear that child pornography laws were never really intended to address situations like this. And I think there's a widespread understanding that it is disproportionate and sort of unfair to young people to slap them with a label of child sex offender for engaging in what is often consensual behavior that really has nothing to do with the intent behind child pornography laws. And so some states have begun to adapt and might consider these cases akin to something like sexual harassment, for example, when those images get distributed without consent,
right,
without the sender's permission. But it very much varies state by state.
As you mentioned, if teenagers are doing this, we need to figure out how to talk to them about it. And I'm just curious about the approach that you have. Is it about trying to understand the consequences of what sexting means to them, the kinds of messages, the impact that that might have on their relationships. Help us understand how we should talk to young people about it.
Sure. So a lot of the existing conversation has actually centered around these legal consequences. And I, you know, definitely believe it's important for young people to understand what the legal risks are. However, I think focusing the conversation so much there is not really effective. It winds up coming across as very fear-mongering to young people and something that they can easily tune out and think that it's not going to happen to them. And it's really not speaking to any of the underlying motivations behind the behavior and acknowledging that there are real positive reasons that drive young people to engage in sexting. So what we advocate for is really couching the conversation in the context of talking about communication, healthy relationships, boundaries, and consent. We want young people to understand the risks and be able to develop skills to help them make an assessment of whether or not this is a risk they're comfortable with in different situations, help them analyze their relationship to the person that they're texting with to really determine whether they think this is someone trustworthy, and to have a conversation proactively with that person to make sure they've set clear boundaries around what permission they're giving, you know, saying upfront that this message is really for your eyes only. I'm trusting you not to share it with anyone else. Saying, you know, I feel like you're pressuring me to send this text and I'm really not comfortable with this and I need you to back off. I really like you. I want to keep this relationship going, but this isn't something I'm comfortable with. Those are basic skills around negotiating boundaries and relationships and communicating that we already cover in sex education, but we need to apply them to this behavior, to sexting, in a way that we haven't been.
I mean, it sounds like you're saying it's really the same kind of message. We're just talking about the message to young people about thinking through their behavior and making sure that they know when they're giving consent what they are saying there. I mean, it sounds like we can apply that to just about all sex ed for kids.
Absolutely. And good sex education does already include these kinds of lessons, not only to help young people state their own boundaries, but to help them really hear and respect the boundaries of a partner, to, you know, stop applying any sort of pressure if they are, if they hear from a partner that they're making them feel uncomfortable. Those are such fundamental relationship skills that we need to be teaching. I think when these new technologies get introduced, though, adults have a tendency to sort of panic. It feels like, you know, this brave new world and we don't know how to address it. And we leap to some of these kind of sensationalized stories where we think this behavior is really rampant and out of hand. When if we take a step back and take a couple deep breaths, we see that we already have the ability to address these topics at, you know, the sort of fundamental building block level of talking about communication, talking about consent.
Do teens want to talk about this?
They do. I think that we really risk alienating students when we don't address the topics that are so relevant to their lives. They notice the gaps in the curriculum and think that their teachers seem out of touch if they're not talking about things like sexting or even just the role of digital communication in relationships, period. We have a lot of lessons that we teach about communication skills that assume all conversations and relationships happen with face-to-face verbal communication. And that's simply not how young people carry on their relationships today. And so we need to adapt. Otherwise, we just seem like out-of-touch adults.
And that's Nicole Cushman. Again, she's executive director at ANSWER, an organization that promotes sex ed, and it's located at Rutgers University. And we asked her to join us today on Radio Times to talk about sexting and teenagers. You can join us as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Here's a comment from Maureen. She says, I think we should find some organization outside the school system to help young people with these questions. I think doing it in a group setting with their peers at a particular age in a school setting could raise some awkward situations where some students would feel pressured to experiment even if they aren't ready. I mean, in certain ways, that's sort of the heart of sex education, is it not, Nicole?
Yeah, I think that's a really important comment. You know, what we know from decades of research about sex education is that simply by addressing these topics in the classroom and by giving young people information and skills, we don't encourage them to engage in the behaviors. There was once a lot of fear that just talking to teens about sex and about condoms and birth control was going to sort of give them permission to go out and engage in these behaviors and increase sexual activity. What we know, in fact, is that the opposite occurs, that the more we arm young people with information and skills to navigate these situations, the more likely they are to wait and to make really well thought out decisions. And so I think the same is true for sex. And I'm less worried about us pressuring young people simply by talking about this behavior in the classroom. Young people already know it exists. They know their peers are doing it. And so I think there's a greater risk to ignoring it. That said, I absolutely agree that there's a role for outside groups to provide resources in other settings. It's not an either or kind of approach in my mind. And we do a lot of that in the digital space. So at Answer, we publish a magazine and website called Sex Etc., sexetc.org, that features content written by teens for teens. So we have high school students who are writing about the issues like sexting that are most relevant to them. And we also are part of a project called Amaze, amaze.org, that uses animated videos to reach even younger adolescents with information on these topics. And we have produced a short animated video on sexting that addresses many of these questions.
That's so interesting. Now, at what age do you introduce the idea of sexting to young people as part of a sex ed curriculum?
Yeah. So the Amaze videos are intended for young people ages 10 to 14, so late elementary and middle school. And I would say, you know, that tends to be the age when young people are getting cell phones these days. You know, it does vary a lot, especially depending on socioeconomic status. But they are aware of these kinds of behaviors really from the time they hit middle school. And so we need to be addressing it in age-appropriate ways. That doesn't mean that we're going to get into super explicit conversations with preteens, but we need to at least acknowledge the behavior exists and create some sort of a foundation, those building blocks, so that we can make the conversation more nuanced as they get older. Certainly by the time they're in high school, we need to be talking to them about the risks.
But do you think with this access to the internet and kids have it, we all have it, that has sexualized adolescence?
That's a good question. You know, Michelle talked earlier in the hour about the fact that the internet has long been imbued with sexuality. It's been a vehicle for pornography, you know, since the internet began. And it certainly gives people easier access. What we know is that a lot of what young people stumble upon when it comes to sexual content online, they find accidentally. They're not necessarily going out looking for it, but young people have questions. Their curiosity about sexuality is completely natural and appropriate. And so if we don't meet them with answers to those questions proactively as supportive adults, as parents and caregivers and educators, they are going to turn to the internet. They're going to Google those questions, and we don't know what they might find there. So it's really important that we begin these conversations early and we keep the lines of communication open.
Here's a comment from Tony who says, I'm worried that the problem of teaching students to explain why they're uncomfortable. I'd rather teach my daughter that people should respect her hard no without explanation. And it's, you know, I appreciate Tony's comments. I just also know that relationships are complicated, especially for young people that are still trying to navigate through all the potential pitfalls and, of course, all the wonder as well.
Yeah, this is such an important comment. And, you know, these situations often aren't so black and white. I think that we have evolved a lot in how we talk about issues of consent when it comes to conversations about sexual assault. We often make this comparison when talking about sexting, that our early lessons about sexual assault and what at the time we largely referred to as date rape prevention really centered on telling primarily girls how to protect themselves and being raped or avoid being assaulted. And it was things like, you know, use a buddy system when you go out, keep an eye on your drink, those kinds of pragmatic tips that, you know, aren't without merit, but we were putting the onus of responsibility entirely on girls to protect themselves from bad behavior by primarily boys. And we have shifted our conversation a lot. We have realized that that approach was really victim blaming. And we're now putting a lot more effort towards talking to young people of all genders, but especially to boys, about their responsibility to get enthusiastic affirmative consent and to respect the no's of their partners. And I think the same thing goes for sexting. We need to be telling young people it is not okay to pressure a peer sending an explicit text message. It is not okay to spread that message around without that person's consent. And that you need to be having these conversations and respecting those boundaries all around.
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Here's an email from Hillary. She says, how does sexting uniquely affect LGBTQ teens? The risk of being outed seems to be heightened here. Have you looked at that?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm so glad it was asked. You know, I don't know that we have any data specific to LGBTQ youth, but we know that in nearly all areas that we look at, whether that's risk for assault, risk for unintended pregnancy, for STDs, LGBTQ youth are at disproportionate risk. And there certainly are instances of young people being outed against their will. And so, you know, it stands to reason that that is a possibility with sexting. If someone sends a text message or a picture to someone of the same gender and that were to get spread around without knowledge, it could reveal information about their sexual orientation that they don't want to get out there in a way that might set them up for more bullying and more negative outcomes. So I'm so glad to hear that your listeners are paying particular attention to the vulnerabilities of LGBTQ youth.
And about a minute or so, Nicole, before we have to say goodbye, we haven't really talked about parents. We put it all on the schools to, you know, to do the sex education part. Final thoughts for parents and talking to their teens about sexting.
Yeah, parents absolutely are and should be the primary sexuality educators of their children, and they really can set the tone at home by talking openly and honestly about these behaviors. And I think that one really great way to start is to ask your kids what they know and have heard, what their peers are doing around sexting, get a sense from them. Do they think this is common? And that can sort of open the door to a conversation in which parents can really express their values and their expectations of their kids, but also really ensure their children feel supported and that they can come to them if they have any concerns or they feel like they're being pressured in any way around sexting.
Well, Nicole, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And that's Nicole Cushman, and she is executive director at ANSWER, an organization that promotes sex ed at Rutgers University. And we began with Michelle Druin, a psychology professor at Purdue University, Fort Wayne. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of the show. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Here's Frank Sinatra, My Funny Valentine.
My funny valentine, sweet comic valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart?